Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Listen, there's a reason that the phrase starving artists exists. The people who make beautiful things in our world commit to a life that can be really difficult financially. And we're in the wildly expensive Bay Area. And we're in this pandemic era, which hurt anybody whose livelihood depended on gathering strangers in a room. But our KQED arts team hit the pavement to find the people who are adapting to this new environment and building a new creative economy. It's not just about money either, but sharing all kinds of resources and support in the face of structural oppressions. We'll talk about how they do it with performing artists, culture amplifiers, and space makers. That conversation's coming up next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Hope you're enjoying your Friday. It's beautiful weather. We're joined this morning by two friends of the show, KQED's own arts and culture writers, Nastia Bonevskaya and Carlos Cabrera Lomeli, who are here to share the stories for this impressive package that the arts team has put together. It's called Our Creative Futures, and you can find it on kqed.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Nastia and Carlos.
Hi, Alexis. Thanks for having us.
Hey, Alexis. Great to be here, man.
Yeah, great to have you both. Also, we know this is really a community conversation, so we want to hear from all kinds of artists out here. We're going to hear from some that are joining us here in the studio. But we've got musicians, performers, visual artists. Did you find ways to support yourself as an artist during the pandemic? How did that change the economics for you? And how did your life just as an artist in this extremely expensive Bay Area change? You can give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, it's KQED Forum. And the email is forum@kqed.org. Nastia, why don't you tell us a little bit about the sort of core idea behind Our Creative Futures?
Yeah, so California's economy fully reopened almost exactly a year ago. And I think then there was a sense of optimism that everything would go back to normal, which, of course, we've seen with the various Delta and Omicron waves that hasn't been the case. And although I'm sure so many of us are excited to be going back to concerts and plays and art galleries again, The artists in our community are still recovering from over 2 years of lost income during the pandemic. There's a study that shows that performing and fine artists in California had a 20% drop in employment between 2019 and 2022. And the average artist in California only makes about $36,000 a year. So I created this series, Our Creative Futures, to really show, to validate the experiences that artists in our community are going through. And then also to celebrate the innovative and resourceful ways that they're not only sustaining their creative practices, but also helping their communities navigate these challenges.
Yeah. I mean, we know that obviously the pandemic, as you've noted, I mean, it had this terrible impact on people, particularly performers and people who needed to gather people in order to do their art. But as you also mentioned, you know, the amount of money that people were making before as artists in California was already really low. And then we've got these other pieces of what it is to be in the Bay Area. So even before the pandemic, what were the sort of real difficulties for Bay Area artists of all kinds?
Yeah, I think the cost of living, most of all, we already at KQED Arts and Culture, we've been covering for years how artists are getting displaced out of San Francisco and Oakland and the rest of the Bay Area, or going to extraordinary lengths to stay here. So many of these factors were already an issue before the pandemic. And then now with show cancellations that happened over the past 2 years, also gas prices and inflation now, that climate has only gotten more challenging.
Yeah. I've also heard from friends in the arts community a kind of frustration with our local wealthy people for not investing in the arts community, for not providing the kind of levels of support and philanthropy that allow people to really make a living.
Yeah, I've heard the same, absolutely. I think that there are those that do fund foundations that give out artist grants, and their contributions, shouldn't be forgotten. But at the same time, there's such a wealth disparity in the Bay Area, and it's taking a huge toll on the arts and the artists' ability to just be creative.
Yeah. Carlos, I wanted to ask you about maybe some of the difficulties that different artists have found in kind of managing the desire to continue to show their work, to continue to perform, but also keeping their own communities and their own people safe.
Totally. Yeah. And I think for that, a great example of that is Open to All. And we have Gorilla Davis over here with us, who's one of the creators of Oakland to All, which is a collective created by Gorilla, Ashley Banks, and Shireen Rahimi. And they've been producing balls, which are the spaces where people can come and perform. I mean, voguing is part of it, but also there's so much more to it. And they've been changing the structure of these balls to center mental health and substance abuse issues. So it's all about creating a space where people can perform again, but also where conversations about the stuff that people are going through day to day, relating to their mental health or issues about substance abuse that they're going through or their friends are going through, like they can talk about it openly, that they can connect to like existing resources or agencies that can provide them support with that. So it's something really cool that's transforming the ballroom scene across the Bay Area, and it's partly due to the tough conversations that have come up during the pandemic.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk more about that a little later and talk with Gorilla Banks. Nastia, wanted to, focus in on something that Carlos was saying, which is this isn't really just about how artists are finding just dollars. This series really seems to focus on the people who are building arts infrastructure, this work that's normally kind of overlooked. But, if you want to have gallery shows, you need to have galleries. If you want to have, ballroom competitions, you need to have people who are actually building and presenting those events.
I think there are the stories of really cool artists creating interesting things at the core of each piece in this series, but also each story sort of zooms out into what are the systems that are supporting the arts in this climate. So we wrote about mutual aid networks that artists are creating themselves. Gorilla is a great example of that, actually. And then we also covered government models to fund the arts, like guaranteed income, and nonprofit models as well.
Well, let's talk about your piece, Nastia, in this package. It's about a beloved artist, at least for me and a lot of other people on forum and KQED, LaDonya.
So for those that don't know, LaDonya is one of the biggest breakout artists to come out of San Francisco in the past 2 years. She creates this really exciting blend of traditional Mexican and Latin American music, and then modern sounds like hyphy and hip hop and dembow and reggaeton. And so she's really popular both locally and getting her eyes nationally. She's been featured in the New York Times and recently performed at South by Southwest. And she kind of gave us a peek behind the curtain of what it takes to sustain a career at that level. And it requires constant work that's both creating music and rehearsing and performing with her band, funding tours. She also, has to handle the booking and logistics of that, the whole business side. And then also in this social media attention economy, she's also constantly creating content. So that's kind of multiple jobs, all rolled into one that independent artists have to do to sustain the momentum of their careers. And something that's helping her is San Francisco's Guaranteed Income Pilot for Artists, which is $1,000 a month unconditional cash transfer that the city is giving to 130 artists right now.
Wow. One of the things that you point out too is that a lot of the artists in our area, because they need to like make ends meet, they end up teaching too. And so when there were problems with schools or, outside instructors or programs or cut or things like that, they do need to sort of fill these gaps, which is one of the things that this universal basic income pilot's trying to do too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So LaDuana teaches in the mariachi music program in the San Francisco Unified School District and Oakland Unified School District. And she's also an instructor for SF Jazz's Jazz in the Middle program. And in our interview, she pointed out that these are contract gigs. They're not jobs with benefits necessarily. And that there's also kind of a double bind of being an artist who's also an educator, because teaching is one of the ways artists have traditionally made a living, and now they can be exposed to COVID in the classroom, which could throw off their plans to perform and tour. And likewise, they can also be exposed to COVID while on tour, which would prevent them from teaching. So they're navigating these really tight spaces, and other side hustles that artists have typically turned to, like food service or driving ride shares, are impacted in similar ways.
And all of the things that you just mentioned, this is like precarious labor, contract work, you know, they've got to manage also their health insurance and all those things. So this UBI pilot, it's been administered by the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, right? And I just want to know a little bit more about how was this received when it came into the community?
Yeah, so this program launched in May of last year, and although I think artists were really happy to see a program like this, there was some criticism of how it was rolled out. So the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts basically created an application process that was limited by income and certain zip codes that were hardest hit by the pandemic. But the ultimate selection was sort of randomized. And so there were critics of the program that said that the money should have really gone to the artists with the greatest need. But part of YBCA's philosophy on this program also is that everyone is deserving of economic security, and they don't necessarily want artists to compete for this grant, you know, based on, like, in the grant world, there's kind of this paradigm where artists have to write about their traumas to be seen as worthy of funding. And so this program has a sort of different take that everyone is worthy.
You know, last thing before we go to the break and bring in a whole bunch of artists, it's going to be fun. How else have you seen governmental institutions try to support artists through the pandemic, or have they been focused on other things during this time?
There hasn't been much support from government institutions for individual artists. There have been relief programs for example, for independent music venues and promoters, or there have been programs targeted at nonprofits. But what San Francisco is doing with the guaranteed income pilot for artists is pretty innovative in that regard.
We're talking about the creative economy and how artists are making it through this long, long pandemic. We're joined by Nastia Bonovskaya, associate editor at KQED Arts and Culture, and Carlos Cabrera Lomeli, reporter with KQED. And again, we do want to hear from you. How did you find ways to support yourself as an artist during the pandemic? And how did you help build the community around you of artists and of artists supporters? You can give us a call, 866-733-6786. Feel like that work of building the arts community is so often overlooked. Number's 866-733-6786. Get in touch Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We're KQED Forum, or the email is forum@kqed.org. Stay tuned for a whole bunch of artists. This is Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We've been talking about the creative economy. We've got a great new package on kqed.org called Our Creative Futures. And we're talking about how artists are making it through the pandemic. I want to bring in a trio of artists who are all making it work. First, we've got Kim Requesto, a multidisciplinary artist and a cultural practitioner at Belay Creative Studios. Welcome, Kim.
Hey, Alexis. Thank you so much for having me on. How are you?
Thanks for joining us. Doing well, doing well. We've also got Roz Nash, founder of the People's Conservatory and a co-founder of The Agency. Welcome, Roz.
Thank you.
And we've got Gorilla Davis, performing artist with Oakland to All. Welcome, Gorilla.
Good morning. Thank you.
Gorilla, let's start with you. You know, before the break, Carlos was talking a little bit about Oakland to All and, you know, this kind of rich ballroom scene that has this amazing history among BIPOC queer communities. How'd you get involved with ballroom?
So I actually got involved in ballroom when I first moved to the Bay Area around 7 years ago. And I met my mother, Jasmine Infinity, here, who grew up in ballrooms. She's a DJ. And she threw a ball, and I was an amateur photographer at the time, and she booked me to shoot her ball. And so that was kind of like my first introduction into ballroom. Mm-hmm. And at that event is where I was able to meet my chosen family. Mm-hmm. I was able to meet the crew, the collective of DJs that I'm now a part of. And I just kind of was able to grow and explore my interest as an artist, as a DJ. I was as a photographer and event producer. And it kind of just changed my life to where we are now with Open to All and all the things that are going on.
What has that chosen family meant for you through this really difficult and isolating time of the pandemic?
So for a lot of people in ballroom, there's a lot of shared experience that we have around chosen family. For a lot of us, you know, we're all born innocent, but unfortunately, especially for Black and brown, queer and trans people, we grew up being discarded. We grew up experiencing oppression. A lot of us come from super religious Christian backgrounds or conservative families. And unfortunately have to experience things like teen homelessness and having to resort to like what public health calls high risk things like sex work, selling drugs, joining a gang, et cetera, et cetera. We're forced into the margins of society and have to do so many things just to survive. And ballroom is one of those spaces, and it's a culture of chosen families where you can have that support, not only mental, emotional support, but physical support in the actual house. It's a different kind of family than your immediate family. It's a chosen family that you choose, they choose you. And that kind of really helped me, you know, survive as a teenager into where I am now. I'm a father with over 10 children in LA here in the Bay and Boston. And without chosen family, I don't know where any of us would be.
Yeah. And that when you say father in that context, you're not talking about you have 10 babies. You're talking about that within the context of this ballroom scene and its sort of chosen family dynamics, right?
Yes. A father as in chosen family, as in we're chosen, like we chose each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a biological father, chosen father.
I was about to say, you've been busy. So with Oakland to All, you all have really adapted. It's in Carlos wrote this great story about what you all have been doing during the pandemic. You've all really adapted to try to center particular issues during the pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Yes. So, Oakland. Ashley Basquiat, also known as Ashley Banks, and me, Gorilla Pump. And I'm part of a collective called We Are the Ones We've Been Waiting For. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially an artist-based collective that focuses on mutual aid. And prior to the pandemic, we were doing a lot of events and fundraisers for community experiencing urgent need. Specifically, we're working with trans asylum seekers inside detention and using art and events to raise money to give to girls in detention, like to put on their commissary. And our work just kind of like continued to grow throughout that first year. And then the pandemic hit. And what was interesting for us was that, you know, a lot of arts things around the city, a lot of clubs, a lot of galleries, everything shut down. But for our collective, the need of our community just kind of like rose exponentially. There's a lot of sex workers, a lot of artists who just didn't have access to making money in the ways that they used to. Mm. So like the need for mutual aid work just kind of really grew. And we were known for our dance party renegades, our art market fairs. We were just doing a lot of things outdoors. And all the events that we did just kind of got bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. There was this big mural that we did at Lake Merritt There's a couple art actions that we did. And at each event that we did, we're raising money. And we're using that money and giving it to folks who needed it. But also a portion of the money from each event just carried on to the next one. And that's how we did our first Open to All at the Lake. I think we had around $2,000 that we had accrued from all the events that we did. And that $2,000 funded that our first ball at the lake. And during the time, it was fire season. The Proud Boys were everywhere. It was at the height of Black Lives Matter. And so, you know, we wanted to use the space to not only, you know, bring communities safely together, but also just kind of creatively express our resistance and just like be there with community in a way that was culturally responding to what's culturally happening at the time, something that's relevant.
That's great. All right, we're going to come to what you have coming up next, but let's hear from Kim Requesto. Let's talk about Kim. Let's first talk about your own artistic practice. Like you're a dancer, right?
Yes. So I am a dancer. I also identify as a multidisciplinary artist, and I also work with film medium and also 35mm film. But my main practice really is in Philippine dance and really focusing on the indigenous dances of the Philippines.
Yeah. And you also, right, you publish a zine called Unedited Film. Can you tell us a little bit about that too? Which kind of tied in with a lot of your other work, seems like.
Yes, of course. So I published a zine called Unedited Film, Gonohofo Lake, Cebu, Philippines. That's basically the area of where the films were, or the photos were created. And so in February 2020, like right before the pandemic, I was on a research trip with the Philippine dance organization that I'm part of called Parangal Dance Company. And we visited the Tiboli people of Gonohofo in Lake Cebu. And with the permission of the community leader, her name's Boy Rosie, I created a zine to showcase and highlight their daily life. And, you know, it's a way to provide folks in the diaspora who wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to visit the Tiboli community to see what their life is like and to get to know them through visual, through pictures. And at the same time, I was able to also support their mission of building a larger school of traditions for their community by using the zines to fund, a kind of like a donation process. Yes.
So tell us about what getting through this pandemic's been like for you.
You know, it's a pandemic, so there's ups and downs of like every day. But as an artist, it really gave me a lot of opportunity to reflect in my art and also how I wanted to progress. And it provided me a lot of opportunity to look into more resources and more orgs that would help support me in the long run.
And so you've been a part of this community, Ballet Creative, now. How has it helped you? I mean, we're kind of really focusing on this kind of infrastructure, this ecosystem of arts and kind of mutual aid organizations that have sprung up. How did you end up working with Ballet Creative and how has it gone?
Yeah, of course. Just to go back a little. So Ballet Creative, it's located in the Soma Pilipinas District, which is the Philippine Cultural Heritage District. And it's also a Philippinex American cultural center that supports creatives by providing studio space for resident artists and programs and also other resources. And so, They had a grant program that they were doing in 2020 that I applied for. And it was really through that grant that enabled me to produce my zine. And since then, I was able to do other things with Ballet Creative. When I needed to showcase my dance films, they let me also utilize their streaming hub to host that event. Mm.
And, you know, for a place like Ballet Creative, you know, what would you do if you didn't have them?
If I didn't have Ballet Creative, I think, you know, I've learned, especially in the field of work that I do, is that you always want to reach out to your community. And thankfully, you know, we have a really large Filipinx community in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy that we have Ballet Creative because it's kind of acting like this newer generation of a cultural center. And, you know, we already have some established orgs, but I think
it's cool. It's cool in a different kind of way. I mean, you know, it's like people know how to put together a website. It looks, you know,
Yes. And they also provide a lot of artist resources that I wish I had when I was starting as an artist.
That's cool. Hey, thank you so much, Kim Requesto. Let's talk with Roz Nash. Roz Nash, founder of the People's Conservatory, co-founder of the agency in Oakland. Roz, how about you personally? You know, you're all, everyone here is both working on community stuff as well as an artist. So how about you? How'd you weather the difficulties of the pandemic as an artist? Roz, can you hear me? Roz Nash? Maybe we'll, while we fix your line, I think we'll bring in Randy from Benicia, an artist. Welcome, Randy, to the show.
Alexis, thank you.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for calling us, Randy.
Long-time listener, really long-time listener, but first-time caller. Love your show today, as always. And this is a very personal issue for me as well, being a I would call a midlife artist, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Been doing it for a long time. Lived in San Francisco for 25 years. Supplemented my income as an artist by teaching at the Academy of Art and Pixar, among other places. Now I teach workshops around the country, and have shifted to more online. Mm-hmm. Work as well as many.
Is that what kind
other...
of saved you during the pandemic, or did you were you able to continue selling work during
ironically,
that time?
Sort of ironically, coincidentally, I guess, I was already in motion with creating more online mentorship course that was through the Tucson Art Academy. And there's a few other artists that mentor through their school as well. It's all online work. But yes, that is the case. With I did other Zoom sessions with other organizations. And I want to hats off to the rest of the guests. I think that what I really would like to just put out there is that community is really, I think, key. As well as just being creative. I think that as artists, that just comes with the territory. But being creative in the hustle of the art business or you know, supporting yourself as an artist is really key. So you have to do what you can. I moved out of the city in 2005 to Vallejo, and there was a big spread in the home and garden section that documenting that move, that because the artists were being squeezed out of the city. So it's not a new story. You know, it's just sort of an ongoing thing. I mean, it's happening here as well. In Benicia at the Arsenal, the Benicia Arsenal, historic Arsenal that has been home to artists throughout the years. And artists are some of the buildings here are for whatever reason are squeezing some of the artists out of there. Arts Benicia itself had to move over the past year. They're a big visual arts center here for the community.
Yeah.
And our own sort of cluster of buildings in the Arsenal are putting on an open studios this weekend, as a matter of fact, that is just grassroots effort. You know, the artists that are here just coming together and trying to help each other out.
All right. Well, check out Benicia Open Studios there. Thank you so much for that perspective, Randy. First time call. Appreciate it after being a long time listener. And it's just amazing to me how the Bay Area's problems seem fractal sometimes. You know, these big problems in San Francisco, slightly smaller problems in Oakland. So, you know, or same version of the problems, but in smaller form in Oakland and Benicia and Vallejo. We've got Roz Nash back on the line, founder of the People's Conservatory and co-founder of the agency in Oakland. Welcome, Roz.
Thank you. How y'all doing?
Hey, good, good. So talk to me about how you personally have weathered the difficulties of the pandemic as an artist.
Well, child, that's a loaded question. I've been an artist for 40 years. And so I've been weathering storms for a very long time. All kinds of storms. And so I've weathered storms as, you know, as a teen coming into artistry as a dancer and then moving into music. And then I moved to New York when I was 17 and I had to learn how to be in, you know, a music artist in New York on my own for about 24 years. Wow. And traveled the world and, you know, just kind of, you know, suffered and succeeded and suffered and succeeded. And so there's many highs and lows in being an artist, and a pandemic is not going to really change much as far as I'm concerned, because every year is a pandemic of some sort in our lives. So, you know, and as a Black woman just navigating this world, it's not really it, honestly. It's given me some time to rest myself and give myself some time to say, you know what, I've been doing this for a minute and maybe this is time for me to just rest, because Black women don't get to rest, and I'm a single mom of twins, so we needed a break.
I saw that your twins look young too, so
they are, honey.
I was wondering, you know, it seems like your response to that has been to kind of embed in this ecosystem of different creative organizations and businesses. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've been running, I've been a performing artist my whole life. And then I sort of got into youth development in New York in a couple of organizations there, and then started a couple of organizations there myself before moving back home, which is where I grew up. I grew up here in San Francisco. And so I came back here about 7.5 years ago with my twins, and was just kind of looking for some space to slow it down a bit. And I had gotten my degree. I'd gotten my business degree from NYU in arts management. And I was just like, maybe it's time for me to like really create something big and something that can support many, many more artists than I've been able to do just as an individual kind of like vendor. And so when I got here, I was able to help found a school called Roses and Concrete, which is a school for Black and Brown, just kind of supporting Black and Brown unity, supporting, bilingual education, arts education. And I've been an arts educator for, this will be my 30th year as an arts educator. And so, you know, I wanted to help the school build an arts curriculum.
Yeah, Roz, you may have lost you one more time, but we will come back to you in just a second. We're talking about the creative economy, how artists are making it through, you know, the pandemic and this life, with Roz Nash, founder of the People's Conservatory, Gorilla Davis, a performing artist at Oakland to All, Kim Requesto, multidisciplinary artist and cultural practitioner with Ballet Creative Studios. We also have KQED's own Nastia Vonovskaya and Carlos Cabrera Lomeli. And we'd love to hear from you. The number is 866-733-6786. How have you kind of burrowed into your community, found your ecosystem of support out there? The number is 866-733-6786. We'll be back to talk about our creative futures in just a moment.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about our creative futures, a wonderful package put together by KQED Arts and Culture team. Before the break, we were just talking with Roz Nash, founder of the People's Conservatory and co-founder of The Agency in Oakland. And Roz, I just wanted to give you a chance to finish up, and particularly to tell us about The Agency in Oakland.
Yes, no problem. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, I was just saying that from Roses and Concrete, I was able to, we were able to really integrate the arts in that school and provide over 150 arts classes per week for 300 kids. Wow. And so it kind of proved as a model for how we could do it in other schools. So that's how I started my current organization, the People's Conservatory. And so we're now in 16 schools and we serve over 5,000 kids. And these are all majority Black and brown babies that are underserved. That do not have arts programming in their schools. And it's a way, you know, we've been able to create, you know, create an economy for artists to be able to, you know, as I believe Nastia was nodding to earlier, is, you know, we all have hustles, side hustles, mm-hmm. you know, and so being able to provide jobs for artists to extend their craft to young people is a really indelible part of that process of being an artist. You know, sharing your craft is a part of being an artist. So, and I've always done it. So, so I really relish the fact that we're able to provide, you know, these economies for artists to be able to make money and to continue their work, but also be able to give back to the babies. And so when I met Asan Jethmal, he was doing work at the Tribune building and, you know, providing space for artists outside in the Tribune parking lot during the pandemic, which I thought was pretty innovative. And he allowed me to use the space to teach my dance classes to my kids. And so we built a friendship off of that. And so he was able to forge a new sort of relationship with the Tribune developers, the owners of the Tribune building who are developers. And they bought this huge, huge, huge facility called now called the Loom, which used to be a cotton mill factory in the 1800s. Okay. So it's got a loaded history. Mm-hmm. And so when we walked into it, we were just like, what is this? You know, and what was this? And so we started to kind of dig into the history and understand what it was. And we're just kind of like, wow, this is something that we have to be a part of, because if we're not, what are these developers going to do with it? You know, like, how are they going to finesse this and really appeal to community when it has such a loaded history, when it really needs like a huge cleansing and it needs like, you know, our bodies in here, you know, deciding how this should go. And so we were able to acquire a space and start to just kind of work it out and figure out, well, how would we use this space for our organizations? And that's kind of how I went into it, was to find a space, a home for my kids, for TPC, for the People's Conservatory. But we just kind of quickly realized artists really need space right now. We should use this as a venue. Like, people need this as a venue. And so then we started to rent it out to artists, you know, all sorts of different kinds of artists, folks that are doing, you know, album releases, folks are doing community gatherings, folks who are doing dance parties, folks are doing funerals, just kind of run the gamut of what community needed, because people need space right now. And this is a large space where people feel pretty safe, really tall ceilings, large 10,000 square feet. So you can really stretch out and feel like you're able to, you know, have that distance, but still celebrate with each other. So that's kind of how I found my way in there.
Thank you so much, Roz Nash. I love that this is all the stuff you're doing while you're finding rest.
I know, right?
We are also joined by Nastia Bonavskaya, Associate Editor at KQED Arts and Culture, Carlos Cabrera Lomeli, reporter at KQED, Kim Requesto, multidisciplinary artist Roz Nash, you just heard, and Gorilla Davis, performing artist at Oakland. To all, we've got a bunch of calls coming in. I want to get to just get a few more artists on the air here. Marie in Los Gatos, welcome.
Hello. So with the pandemic, a lot of my shows went virtual or got canceled. I'm an oil painter, and I was taking everything really hard with the fires and the political upheavals and just all the tragedy. So I decided I would change my medium, and I started embroidering these beautiful silk rainbows onto vintage photographs to really heal myself. And I would share those daily on social media. And we turned them into postcards and sent them all over the world to anyone who wanted a rainbow. And it really created a sense of community. And at the end, when the restrictions were lifted, I had a pop-up in my studio. And it was such a wonderful time of celebration, of getting community back and sort of looking at this experience that we've had. And I used that time to join Artist Alliance, which is a great online forum for artists to connect and up your artistic practice. And now, on the other side of this, I am now going to have my first solo museum show coming up June 17th at New Museum in Los Gatos. So I really use that time to build community and work on work that was essential to me. I remember one thing I heard at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, use this time to really focus on what matters to you the most. Just go deep into that. And that's what's really what saved me.
Oh, man. Hey, thank you for sharing that. It's nice to hear a good story. Thank you so much, Maria in Los Gatos, and congratulations on your first museum show in there in Los Gatos. Nick in Fairfax.
Yes, I just wanted to mention that many years ago in New York City, where I lived at the time, you would see in industrial areas a sign on some buildings that said AIR. AIR stood for Artist in Residence, and it was a special arrangement from the city that allowed artists to reside in industrial buildings which were not at the time zoned for living. And this was the time when light manufacturing was on the wane and there was a lot of empty space. And so artists had huge spaces where they could live fairly cheaply and practice their art. That is pretty much how Soho got started. But I remember those signs, and I lived in buildings like that at the time, and certainly would be nice to see something like that happen in in areas now that where artists need a break just to get by.
Out. Yeah. Hey, that Nick, thank you so much for that. And, you know, Nastya, I wanted to throw that one to you. Do we see different communities trying to get people, get specific artist housing?
It's funny that Nick mentions that because I think Oakland actually had, you know, like thriving sort of underground unzoned artist live workspaces for many years. But there was a major crackdown on that after the 2016 ghost ship fire. So many artists' warehouses got evicted because of unsafe living conditions. And then there's also now competition with but between artists who want to take advantage of those types of spaces and the cannabis industry that uses a lot of those warehouse type properties for growing. I have not seen a major movement for artist housing. If there is one, I would like to know about it and would like to cover it. So my inbox is open.
Yeah, it is. It just does, you know, it's, we've got to make, if we want to have artists in our communities right now, it does feel like we have to do some pretty specific things given the kind of financial realities of being an artist. Jennifer in Santa Rosa, welcome to the show.
Hi. So I'm a painter in Santa Rosa, and during the pandemic when everything was really shut down, I did a lot of work, but I also have a studio that connects with a mini gallery. And it's an outdoor-indoor space. So I found people were really turning to art. They were feeling so bad, and everything felt like it was ending in a way. And I found that I had quite a few visitors in a safe way. They had their masks on. It was indoor-outdoor. And people were seeking art because they felt so bad. So I saw a bit of a rise in the interest of art. And we sold. I mean, we have a couple artists that show there and my own work. And it's in Sebastopol, and it's a outdoor-indoor place called the Barlow. And I saw an uprise in the love of art. Now, since then, other things have always been, you know, are difficult. But that's just how I felt. And a lot of artists went inward more, and beautiful work came out. So it wasn't all bad.
Yeah. You know, Kim Requester, I wanted to send this one over to you. You know, we've heard in these last couple calls, people talking about going inward during the pandemic. Did you do some of that, too, in addition to kind of branching out to the community and helping create these support structures?
Definitely. I did. So a lot of what I did also was I'm a dancer. At the heart of all my work, I'm a dancer. And so I took that time to really ground myself in my movement and to use this as a way to meditate and to really like breathe. There's a form of dance called Bangalai. It's a traditional pre-colonial dance form. And I use those moments while I'm moving to breathe and meditate and just, you know, really look within and to think about my practice and how I'm evolving that. So that's one way I took it inward.
That's beautiful. Gorilla Davis, how about you? Your art form is about performance, But obviously, there's a lot more that goes into it. Were you able to spend time going inward too, kind of driven by the various challenges and griefs of this pandemic?
Yeah, so I'm actually not a performing artist. I'm a photographer and a DJ. And I'm also like a cultural like organizer. And I kind of use that, my organizing, I view it as an art because I'm using it to bring people together in a creative way. But one thing that I really learned and a lot of people in our collective learned is self-care. Because a lot of the work, again, that we do is based around mutual aid and it's helping each other and helping community. But there's almost so much that you could do if you don't take care of yourself first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we live in the Bay Area, social justice warriors, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of martyrdom, a lot of wanting to do for others. But something that we learned in our collective and in our community is how can we take care of ourselves, our mental health, our spiritual health, our emotional health, our physical health. And there are, you know, access to resources that we don't always have just because of the marginalized identities that that we live with. So, you know, calling on your friends, calling on community, chosen family can show up in certain ways if you ask. But self-care is definitely the biggest thing that I've learned throughout the pandemic, for sure.
Yeah. Thank you, Gorilla. DJ, photographer, organizer, Gorilla Davis with Oakland to All. You know, Tammy writes in to say, through a partnership between Dow Rising and Akinati Foundation, the Creatives in Place Listening Project explores the stories of 22 diverse Bay Area artists to unearth what it feels like to survive and thrive in the Bay Area during a time of great upheaval. You can check that out, which sounds great. Creativesinplace.org. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. Maybe you've noticed. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Wanted to get to one more call. Maybe we have time for two. Tom in Mill Valley. Hey, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I believe you just talked to a friend of mine, Randy, a few minutes ago.
Oh, fun.
The way I survived the pandemic, I felt, you know, pretty much trapped like everybody else. So what I decided to do was, since I'm a plein air artist, I took my easel out. Plein air means I paint on location. I went out to Mount Tam, I went out to Muir Beach, went out to Slide Ranch, and I painted. And then what I did was I took a photograph of the painting with the scenery, not me in it, and I just posted it on the local website. I got so many responses. I had old collectors come out of the woodwork. I had people calling me up, coming by my studio, and my gallery started selling very well. The past 2 years were some of the best 2 years I've ever had because people were not traveling. They had extra money. They were fixing up their homes, and they decided to buy art. And like Randy, I've been in painting in the Bay Area for 40 years, in Marin especially, and the past couple of months I had to move to Burlingame because I could not afford the rent. They kept jacking the rent up. Like always, people want to live where the artists are, and the artists can no longer afford because the rents go up. You know, housing is the whole new problem. Luckily, I got a place in Burlingame. My gallery down here is doing very well. The new Burlingame Community Center is opening up soon. They're going to be featuring over 20 of my paintings. So things are doing really well for me, but you've got to market, and artists are not good at marketing. You got to be on top of it. You got to keep in touch with your collectors.
Yeah, Tom, thank you for that. Also, one interesting thing about the show is just seeing, you know, the spread of artists just all over the Bay Area, kind of a maybe unintended effect of that housing crisis is just pushing people all across the Bay and pushing in particular artists. Robert writes in to say, one of the best ways to support local artists is to visit various Bay Area open studios, like the annual San Francisco event held over 4 weekends every fall, or the current East Bay open studios. We heard Randy mention the ones up in Benicia, including this weekend. You meet fascinating artists, see fresh art up close, enjoy some wine and cheese, and if inclined, buy art directly from the source. Most of the art I have at home I acquired at open studios. Nastia, you know, as you've heard all these different stories and as you've, you know, put this package together, are there sort of other threads that we haven't gotten to yet that you think are been a real part of this experience for artists during the pandemic?
Well, I think in the way that we often cover arts, it's with an emphasis on the consumer experience, like what can we listen to and go do. But I think running thread through all of these stories is also, you know, as people that appreciate the contributions of artists in our cities and the way that artists make our cities vibrant and expose us to new ideas, it's really important to be intentional about supporting the local artists in our communities, whether that's buying tickets to their events or buying their music on Bandcamp and things like that, or even donating to mutual aid as well.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I keep thinking about just hearing everybody is the kind of ecologies of care that have kind of developed during this time. You know, Carlos, in your reporting, you know, alongside Oakland to All, have you discovered other organizations that seem to have that same kind of framework?
Yeah, of course. And this is, I'm thinking of Mission Meals in San Francisco. That's a mutual aid collective in the Mission District created by Gabriela Alemán or Smug Morenita on Instagram, who use her platform as a graphic artist to crowdfund for a mutual aid collective that's feeding hundreds of families across the Mission District, the Excelsior. I'm also thinking about the work that artists at Local Color in San Jose are doing. They've been really instrumental in bringing people back to San Jose's downtown. As we saw in 2020 and 2021, a lot of people, a lot of small businesses has left San Jose's downtown. And it's really been artists that are bringing back life back to downtowns across the Bay Area. And I think that shows like something really, a really key point, which is what is the responsibility of local officials, local authorities to artists that are taking on this burden that of, you know, taking care of communities that really should be being taken up by officials, by authorities. Artists are doing the work that people, that other people, that officials, that governments aren't really doing.
And, you know, it's amazing because you look at other countries, like if you look at the support that Canada, for example, provides for filmmakers who are First Peoples, you know, Indigenous folks of Canada, it's pretty remarkable what we aren't doing here. Or, you know, classic example of France as well. Curtis writes, in the fall of 2019, another listener, we established the Papes music stage at our coffee roastery in Napa. During the pandemic, we coordinated at-home events for musicians to keep them engaged in playing and promoting their music. We offer local musicians a music-centric space to perform. We live stream, produce live music videos, and conduct and produce Meet the Musician interviews with performers to help them enhance their electronic press kit, and they do it all at no charge. We've been talking about the series Our Creative Futures from KQED Arts and Culture and how artists are making it through the pandemic. Been joined by Nastia Bonevskaya, Associate Editor, KQED Arts and Culture, and Carlos Cabrera Lomeli, reporter with KQED. Thanks to the two of you.
Thanks, Alexis.
Thanks for having us.
We've also been joined by Kim Requesto, a multidisciplinary artist and cultural practitioner with Belay Creative Studios. Thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you so much for having me.
Roz Nash joined us, founder of the People's Conservatory and co-founder of the agency in Oakland. Thank you, Roz.
Thank you for having me.
And Gorilla Davis, a DJ, photographer, and organizer with Oakland to All. Thank you, Gorilla.
Thank you so much, and good morning, everybody.
This Hour Forms, produced by Blanca Torres, Grace Juan, Cesar Saldana. Marlena Jackson Rotondo is our engagement producer. Judy Campbell's lead producer. Engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Brendan Willard, and Chris Hoff. Interns are Jennifer Ng and Paul C. Kelly Campos. Susan Davis is our senior producer. Executive editor is Ethan Tobin Lindsay. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another Hour Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.